Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good evening to you.
Goodly evening to you too, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm great. I really enjoyed our 4-0 win over Everton.
Yesterday. It went off a treat.
Unbelievable. Did you see that goal from Ben White? Whew. Won't see the likes of that again anytime soon.
Special memories, Andrew, that we'll treasure forever. My sympathies with the Arsenal fans who travelled from far and wide to attend that game. I must say, I had a few messages off people on social media who'd, you know, crossed the Atlantic and the like. Must be very, very disappointing for them.
Yeah, of course. I had a message today from a guy on Twitter as well who'd come from South Africa for the Everton game and the PSV game. And there was a guy on the Discord as well. Let me see if I can... the very least I could do is give him a shout out.
Feels like he deserves it. He's come, you know, into another hemisphere.
Envoys on the Twitter, on the Discord rather. He was over to see the Everton game and the PSV game as well, and now will not see anything.
You'd be cursing your luck about that. It's strange. It was a strange weekend, actually, without any Premier League football or any football of any kind.
It was. I mean, I suppose we might as well just get into it. What did you think of the decision to postpone football? Maybe a little bit hasty, and I think what's happened this week as well has shown that that's probably even more true than it was back then. And look, I just want to say, I know not everyone agrees with this. Some people think it was the right thing to do, and that's absolutely fine. I just happen to think that it was the wrong decision, you know, especially as other sports went on. And, you know, if you're talking about respect, if you're talking about paying tribute, all those kinds of things, I don't know how you do that, apart from on an individual basis, if you cancel, you know, football matches where people gather and can come together and do those things.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, those provide great opportunities for those moments of remembrance or acknowledgement, whatever it might be. I think it was it felt like a bit of a premature decision. It felt like a decision football made thinking that was the way everything was going to go. And then suddenly other sports were turning around saying, actually, we're going to play. You know, I know there was some boxing cancelled, but rugby played, as far as I'm aware, cricket played. Football was kind of the odd one out in that respect. And personally, I think it was a mistake. I don't think it was necessary. I think the games would have provided an opportunity for those moments of reflection and, you know, potentially in their own way, a tribute if people feel that's appropriate. And, you know, in a time of national mourning, if you can call it that, I know people's individual responses will differ, but that's what we're being told it is. Having some sport on the telly or to attend would have been nice. So I think it was unfortunate, personally, that it was cancelled. And presents us with some sort of interesting dilemmas moving forward in terms of when these games might be played. And obviously, it's not just the Premier League, right? Arsenal have been affected in terms of their Europa League game we discovered today too.
Yeah, well, Arsenal were supposed to play PSV Eindhoven on Thursday. That game has been postponed. And I suppose we could talk about what's going to happen and how that game gets rescheduled and when in a moment. But I saw there was a lot of sort of interesting reaction to it, in that, you know, Chelsea's game against whoever the fuck Chelsea are playing. I don't know who they're playing. I don't care who Chelsea are playing, you know, but whoever the fuck they're playing in the
Red Bull Salzburg.
Disgustingly sweet Energy drink Salzburg.
FC.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I still don't care. But that game is going ahead, and people are saying, well, why can't Arsenal versus PSV go ahead if Chelsea can go ahead in the Champions League? And, I understand that. I mean, it's difficult to know exactly what the difference might be, but I do think there is the issue that from Thursday to Monday, the Queen is lying in state, I think is how they say it. And this is like 24 hours a day. People are going to be able to queue up and file past the coffin and pay their respects. So I think the level of policing required from Thursday to Monday is perhaps different than it is earlier in the week. I think that's kind of what I'm, you know, we understand that the reason it can't go ahead is because there aren't enough police available to let the game go ahead safely. Arsenal really wanted to play this game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And about a few days ago, they were pretty confident it would be played. Then last night we saw a press conference, or was it the night before? Last couple of days we saw a press conference from Ruud van Nistelrooy over the weekend anyway, in which he said the game was in some doubt. And then, you know, that came out via the press as well, that there was these police considerations. And ultimately it's gone. And I have to say, my only sort of slight confusion, and don't get me wrong, I'm not in any way disappointed, but is that Brentford has been announced that it will go ahead on Sunday.
Yeah.
With that being a London derby and with the proximity to the state funeral and all those things, and it being a Sunday, a bank holiday weekend now, I'm sort of surprised that the policing of the PSV game is problematic, but that Brentford can be policed. I wonder if maybe the fact PSV is an evening game makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, is it a numbers thing? I mean, the 60,000 going to the Emirates for an evening game with a large collection of away fans, and I'm not saying that PSV fans are, you know, just going to come and wreck the place or anything like that, but it is a consideration when they hold these games. You know, the management of away fans is certainly part of the planning and everything else, and they would need X amount of police to deal with that element of things, right?
Yeah, whereas, and they've moved Brentford forward, interestingly, as well, whereas PSV obviously is an evening game. Both sets of fans will have had good time to get a drink before then. Maybe that affects policing considerations. I don't know.
Do you think that's why they brought Brentford forward? So people aren't as pissed as they might be if the game was at 2 o'clock. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, even 2 o'clock's not that long, is it? But, you know, to be in the pub beforehand, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a consideration, but there must be other factors as well in terms of other events occurring in London, maybe across the weekend, and trying to distribute them accordingly so you can manage the flow of people, the allocation of police officers. It's, you know, we're not privy to all the details, but policing was the issue on PSV. And Brentford is going ahead, which I think is a good thing. I mean, I thought that would be the one Premier League game that would have no chance of getting on because it's a London derby.
I mean, your geography is better than mine when it comes to London, obviously. But I mean, I presume all this sort of stuff, you know, the funeral stuff, is it happening around Westminster? Westminster Abbey?
I actually don't know, Andrew. Right. I mean, I've not been keeping too up to date with the funeral plans, but I would imagine it will be, you'd think, right? Westminster Abbey, something like that.
And is that not more or less like Brentford to Westminster is more or less equidistant from like North London to Westminster? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a fair old distance. I mean, Brentford's a fair way out of the way. So, yeah, the funeral will be Westminster Abbey. On Monday at 11 o'clock. Fortunately, they've managed to square it and make it work, and we're going to have a game this weekend, which I think is a really positive thing.
I mean, it would have been, without the Brentford game going ahead, we'd have had, 3 weeks? Because there's an international break, isn't there?
I mean, some games, you know, have been cancelled from the weekend. Chelsea's match with Liverpool, Manchester United were due to host Leeds. You can see why that might be challenging in some respects. Well, I guess just from, a policing perspective, but that's a long way away.
I mean, are they taking police from everywhere to come to London? Is that what that is? Or is there just, is there something about, I know Manchester United versus Leeds is a bit of a spicy fixture at the best of times, you know, between the two sets of fans, it's relatively local, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, are they so short on police numbers in Greater Manchester it's hard to understand why some things are happening and some things are not. Like Chelsea versus Liverpool. Is there much aggro at a game like that?
I don't know. I mean, the Premier League statement said, following extensive consultation with clubs, police, local safety advisory groups and other relevant authorities, there was no option but to postpone the three fixtures. Brighton Crystal Palace had already been called off because of rail strikes.
Well, that's
that was kind of a separate issue.
Yeah, they're spicy though. Brighton, Crystal Palace, they don't like each other at all, do they?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Chelsea, Liverpool, and United, Leeds are both fixtures with some history and needle. We might not think of Chelsea and Liverpool as rivals, but they sort of have an inorganic rivalry, which has kind of come out of the fact they seem to constantly play each other in cup competitions in the last 20 years or so. But I don't know. I mean, I wonder if maybe fan conduct would be a concern. You know, is some of this about appearances?
Well, I mean, there was the tweet, wasn't there, from Henry Winter the last couple of days where, you know, the concern was raised that football fans might not behave themselves in a manner that people considered conducive to, you know, a state of mourning or a state of grief or whatever, which is, you know, it doesn't surprise me that people would think that. But, you know, at the same time, a healthy society has to be open to reasonable dissent, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, not everybody has to. It's weird. Like, you know, a minute silence, I don't think anybody would really do much in a minute silence. But if there's a few people who, I don't know, boo or whatever, what difference does it make, really?
Yeah, you know? I mean, you know, Liverpool fans, I don't think would mind me saying that in the past, you know, they have, or certainly a large proportion of Liverpool fans, a decent proportion, have shown displeasure towards the national anthem, the royal family to different degrees.
The government.
The government, certainly. Yeah, and I tend to wonder if, kind of from a public relations perspective, if that might have been a factor or consideration in the conversation. Certainly that's been speculated about. And if it was, I tend to agree with you, that's a bit of a shame because, you know, I think it has to be an environment where freedom of expression is permitted. But it's complicated, though. I accept that is complicated.
Sure. And it's just one of those where you feel like football fans are viewed through a lens that's different from people who go to rugby or people who go to cricket or whatever it is, you know.
But in some ways, I think it's sort of even more of a shame that the games were cancelled in that case. Because
yeah, I agree. I agree.
There probably would have been opportunities for fans to behave well, by and large, but then maybe that would have been completely overcast, overshadowed by.
Well, yeah, you could have like 25 perfectly observed minutes of silence,
yeah,
and the one that wasn't, that would make all the headlines. I mean, you have a minute of applause or 2 minutes of applause and play the national anthem or whatever it might be. You know, there's ways around that. If you have those concerns, there are ways. You know, to mitigate that. But look, it is what it is. Football was cancelled. Other stuff went ahead. And, you know, now, like you say, it's good that Brentford is going ahead because it's one less game we're going to have to schedule for post-World Cup. Mm-hmm. But the PSV game being postponed is a real problem. One of the other things I saw, like a lot of people say, is like, why couldn't we just play in Eindhoven? Just flip the fixture around. And I saw people as well saying, well, you could have it in a neutral venue. I was chatting to someone on Twitter today who was saying, well, you could just go to the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. And, you know, with all due respect to those suggestions, I don't know if people quite understand how big an operation it is to stage a football match, particularly at short notice, because you've got to deal with all the stewarding, all the policing, the stadium, the facilities, the broadcasting equipment, the hotels, the travel, stewards, part-time staff, full-time staff, all of these things that are planned weeks and weeks and weeks in advance. It's very difficult to do it at like 2 or 3 days notice.
Of course. And then an alternative is, to potentially play the game behind closed doors. But that involves, obviously, robbing fans of the opportunity to see the game and loss of revenue for lots of different streams. So, it's a tricky one. And I have seen, obviously, it was floated today, the idea that maybe Arsenal might end up having to forfeit this match. Some people cited the precedent of Spurs failing to fulfill a Europa League fixture, I think based on the COVID situation at the time. But that seems to me quite a distinct and separate case,
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And I did ask the club today, was the possibility of behind closed doors explored? And they said all possible considerations. They thought about every possible thing. I don't know why the decision to play the game behind closed doors didn't go ahead. Whether it was a case that there's still a measure of policing required, I don't quite really understand what that might be if it's a behind closed doors game. But whether it was financial, which is possible as well, because there's a lot of revenue that's involved in a fixture. Whether it was something to do with broadcasting, sponsorship, advertising, unless there is a disciplinary reason to play a game behind closed doors, like it damages the product, doesn't it? The brand of the Europa League is not what it is if the stadium is empty. It's much better if there's like 40, 50,000 people in there. And, maybe that's a consideration. I don't quite know why that wasn't a goer. But I think when we look at the schedule ahead and when we look at what lies in wait in terms of the fixture list and how then we squeeze this game in, I wonder if they might think it's a missed opportunity, because look at the fixture list. Where does this game go?
Well, there's not currently an obvious gap, is there? I mean, the one that's being talked about potentially is, could the Manchester City game be moved? I think that's October 19th. Is there a possibility of shifting that later in the season and squeezing it in that midweek? But ultimately, PSV have to agree to these days. I mean, PSV will feel like we were ready to play the game on Thursday night. And so, why should we compromise our schedule based on the English authorities? And that might be the challenge. You might find yourself dealing with a slightly intransigent PSV. That is a problematic one. I mean, just purely from a kind of fan perspective, how would you feel about the club having to give up the game, essentially?
I mean, it'd be very disappointing because it's completely out of their hands. This isn't Arsenal deciding not to play the game. They want to play the game. They wanted to play the game. I'm sure they've explored every possibility to get the game on this week, and it hasn't happened. I just, when you talk about sporting integrity and fairness and all that kind of stuff, you can't have a situation where one pair of teams finishes a group after the other,
Yeah.
I don't think that's right. So the games are scheduled to be played by November 3rd. Whether it's possible that one of the other fixtures could be delayed, I don't quite know. It strikes me that unless there was some special dispensation, then we would have to complete our round of fixtures by November 3rd, when the other final game in the group takes place. Let me just have
a quick... Zurich that night,
Yeah, we have Zurich, and it's Bodo Glimt and PSV Eindhoven. I mean, it is an interesting idea that, even though it's out of Arsenal's hands, Arsenal are the ones that cannot fulfill the fixture.
Mm-hmm.
PSV will be sitting there going, well...
we'll take our 3-0 win.
Well, yeah, please. I mean, it's quite possible that that's what they're thinking. And, like, I wouldn't necessarily blame them either. Some people might say, well, it's not very sporting. Maybe it's not. Some people might say these are fairly unique circumstances which have brought about this postponement. And I think that's absolutely right. But unless PSV agree to rescheduling the game in the slot where that Manchester City league game is, and then that game is moved to some point after the World Cup, then I don't know how we can finish our group at the same time as the other teams. So that then brings into the... I know they did say at no point was the idea of the game being forfeited brought up. I don't think Arsenal are going to bring that up, are they?
They'll be exploring all other avenues first.
Absolutely. You know. But if I was PSV and I was thinking, well, 3 points... with a 3-0 win on the board from a game at the Emirates where that would have been an outstanding result for them. I mean, it would be tempting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's a significant fixture. I mean, I think there's a decent chance these games between PSV and Arsenal decide the group. I think they're probably the two stronger sides in the group. And I think, you know... I wonder if some Arsenal fans would be tempted, looking at the sheer amount of fixtures that we have to play, to chuck it. You know, I do wonder if there might be one or two Arsenal fans out there thinking, well, we could probably do without carrying an extra game in October. But I think it's a game Arsenal need to play. I think it's an important one. And I just have to hope that they can find time in the schedule. But what the broader picture here is, you know, you're going to have a very loaded potential second half of the season, especially if Arsenal get through in Europe and stay in cup competitions. You know, we're already talking about potentially an Everton game, potentially a Manchester City game that was supposed to be played before the World Cup, bumping over until after Christmas. So we always knew the World Cup would play havoc with the schedule. We didn't necessarily anticipate some of these other factors that might play into it. So it's going to be interesting.
It is. I mean, the whole thing, it'd be difficult enough, challenging enough without the World Cup right in the middle of the season. But this, you know, it's like just a gigantic roadblock, isn't it? Because football's gone for, what is it, the best part of 6 weeks?
Yeah.
And I've seen people talk about the EFL fixture. You could move that or you could play the PSV game. But unless you get an extension from UEFA to do that, then... I don't know how that happens, because that game, I think, is scheduled for the 8th of November, whereas the final group game is currently scheduled for the 3rd of November. So,
yeah. And then you've got to play the EFL game somewhere. So,
yeah, and you should play. And look, it's not an easy EFL game either. It's against Brighton. You know, this is not like a game against Colchester where you could say, you know what, we could maybe... pardon me to Colchester, but it was just the first name that came to mind, like a lower division team. I'm not saying we would, you know, it's just that, like, do you remember what Liverpool did last season? Was it last season or season before?
Yeah, where they sent a team of kids, did they?
They sent out a team of kids in the EFL Cup, and their first team was away at the Club World Cup or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you can... put together a competitive team from our academy for a game against Brighton. Whereas maybe if you were playing a second division side, something like that, you could potentially risk it. But again, it all depends on getting more from UEFA. So,
yeah. And I have to say, like, after my experience last season, I don't really like the whole games in hand thing. You know, we spent a long time looking at a league table with lots of games in hand, and then, you know, they all tend to come thick and fast, and actually getting the points on the board is sometimes more challenging than you imagine. I want Arsenal to play their games, especially when, you know, obviously with the exception of the Manchester United game, they've been in very good form. And it feels like a time we should be capitalising on our relatively strong position, and instead some of these games are slipping away from us.
We did have some questions, so I might as well just throw one in now. A couple of people on the Discord, Stickers, says, do you think the rest will benefit us, getting Partey back, other players getting over little niggles, or hurt us because of further congestion to a really congested back half of the season? And AFC Dave 143 says, is there any silver lining to these game postponements, for example, getting Partey and Smith Rowe fit?
I mean, you know, there's been some good news about Thomas Partey. He's back in full training. I think if Arsenal had played Everton at the weekend, I think there's a decent chance he would have been involved in that matchday squad. I don't know whether or not he would have played, but, you know, he might have had some involvement. Is that an advantage? I'm not sure. It's impossible to say, isn't it? Because you just don't know what state your squad will be in when those games do come around.
Mm.
I think, without wishing to just completely reiterate myself, on balance, my feeling is that Arsenal are in quite a good place at the moment, even without a couple of important players. And that if we had the opportunity to go and play these games and get points on the board, capitalise on the good vibes, the good atmosphere, the good form, I think this was the time to do it. And I think Everton and PSV as home games were set up pretty nicely for us, actually, heading into a slightly trickier, I think, Brentford game, potentially.
Yeah.
So, I think I would far rather have seen the matches played. And I think we had enough to get us through those games. But what about you?
You're going to have to play them at some point. So... the question is, are those guys who are fit now and back, are they going to stay fit? That's kind of the question with, yeah, you know, with a couple of them. It's like, oh, good, they're fit, but for how long? And that's the question. I mean, what do you think about the World Cup in general, though, when it comes to the impact on players and leagues and teams and everything else? Because I think a lot of focus is on the guys who are going to go. The guys who are going to be in Qatar, the guys who are going to train and play and all that kind of stuff and travel and the whole lot, right? But surely the bigger challenge in a way is the players who just have their season stopped right in the middle of it, because these guys are going to keep playing. They're going to play competitive football, even if you have some friendlies, which I'm sure the Premier League clubs will be doing. And maybe other clubs across Europe, you know, you might find some friendlies against teams from other leagues, which might be an interesting aspect to this World Cup break. But it's maintaining the fitness and the conditioning of these guys, like the majority of them who aren't going to be at the World Cup, and what the impact might be on them in the second half of the season. Like, you could say the World Cup guys are going to come home tired, but what happens to the guys who stop and then kind of start again? You know, it strikes me that that's as much, at least, of an injury risk than the guys who are going to go to the World Cup.
Yeah, possibly. I think it could also go the other way. I mean, you know, many people connected to sports science or coaching in England have spoken about the hope for a winter break, a true winter break. And this is more than I think any of them ever asked for in that respect. I mean, Tom Allen, who's the head of sports science at Arsenal, this will be a big challenge and test for him in terms of building a regime that can kind of keep those players maintained. I imagine they'll get some time off. I think, like you, there'll probably be some friendly games. There'll probably be some warm weather training. You know, Arsenal have gone to Dubai twice, at least twice under Mikel Arteta. I wonder if they'd consider something like that again in this period. But it is going to be fascinating. I think it's just going to have... It's such a curveball in the season, and we've not really ever seen anything quite like it before.
Mm.
So difficult to say what kind of impact it will have. I have this feeling, on a slightly different note, that the winter transfer window might be a bit busier than normal. I just wonder if, because of the length of the break, especially when you include the tournament, and the fact a tournament takes place, which is always a bit of a catalyst for the market, I do wonder if it may have the feel slightly more of a summer window than the conventional winter one, where you're balancing games and, you know, a limited time in which to do deals. I think maybe it might be a bit more flexible and fluid than we're accustomed to.
Right. So you're saying post-World Cup transfer mayhem.
So I'm saying postpone all our fixtures until after January, when we'll have five new signings. Yes, that's what I'm confirming.
I did like the... Did you see the tweet during the rounds today? Let me see if I can find it here. It comes from Luke, who's at LukeWeb12 on Twitter. He says, Christmas Day, looking tasty. 8 a.m., open presents. 9 a.m., Arsenal versus Everton. 11 a.m., Arsenal versus PSV. 1 p.m., Turkey. 3 p.m., King's Speech. 5 p.m., Brentford versus Arsenal.
Yeah, well, we've got one of those games in the diary for Sunday. So it has felt like quite the hiatus, though, even, you know, in this limited period of time. So, yeah. Spurs last season, they had a couple of games rescheduled and then they came back after January, I think, with a substantially stronger squad. I mean, the signing of Kulusevski alone really helped them. So these things can distort the league table and have important permutations here and there. It does, you know, when we had the COVID season, the initial one where, you know, Project Restart, there was all that talk of asterisks. You know, there'd always be an asterisk against that Liverpool title because it was played behind closed doors and this and that. And this season will have an asterisk all of its own with the World Cup in the middle of it. It's just completely unprecedented.
Let me ask you this one. There is another little question here from Annabelle Rackham, who's at Annabellimore, who said, Arteta has had a lot to contend with in his short time as manager with COVID, postponements, Winter World Cup. So what Arsenal manager do you think has come closest in terms of challenges faced in your lifetimes? And, like, I know we've made this point before, but, like, the amount of just stuff that has happened since he took over as manager and he's had to deal with, it's just bonkers, isn't it, really?
It is. And I guess it's a reflection of sort of the state of the world more broadly. You know, he's a manager in quite chaotic times. I'm not sure I can think of a manager who's had to firefight or deal with, you know, so many different crises that were kind of completely out of his hands. You know, there have been other managers in stressful and difficult situations. George Graham being called to explain himself to the board must have been a pretty difficult day to handle. But I think Arteta, he has been unfortunate in that respect.
What else then? What else are we going to talk about? This is a weird one because normally, you know, you have a little bit of a gap or you have an interlull and there's plenty of stuff going on. But this last, you know, few days anyway have been quite, quite weird, haven't they?
Yeah, I imagine it's weirder. There's a fly buzzing around the room and it's just landed on my laptop screen, which is absolutely lovely. They've been particularly weird in the UK. I don't know. I can't speak to, obviously, what it's been like in Ireland. But here, events have played havoc with everything. I mean, even the TV schedules are up the spout. Celebrity MasterChef was cancelled, Andrew.
For goodness sake.
I know, as if losing the football wasn't bad enough. But yeah, so it has felt like a particularly weird period, and media coverage of the game has been different. I mean, I think the day that the Queen passed away, I went on BBC Football. I check in quite a lot, with, you know, just a kind of good base to sort of see the news. And I went on BBC Football and the main story on BBC Football was Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth has passed away. And I was like, wow. You know, so everything has been a bit skewed and it's been quite a quiet time. I mean, Arsenal, I think Arsenal, I'm right in saying, even sort of stopped their online coverage of the Europa League game. Is that correct?
They did, yeah, at halftime.
Yeah.
At halftime, yeah, it was.
So slightly sort of surreal, really. Whether you think it's right or wrong, it's definitely been surreal and unusual. It's going to feel slightly odd resuming things. But, I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully, it's difficult to say Arsenal go into the game with any kind of momentum, maybe because they lost their last league game, but also just because it feels like there's been this hiatus.
Yeah, and look, we're going to play this game against Brentford on Sunday, hopefully or thankfully. But after that, then there's another two-week break. I mean, do you think there's any possibility that international managers might let affected players play? I mean, is it even possible to schedule a a game during this interlull, like the PSV game? Is that possible?
So. I mean,
it's a bit quick,
you know,
isn't it?
Dealing with UEFA is one thing, dealing with FIFA is another. I think it would be beyond the realms of possibility, to be honest. And also, those international games are important and significant to a number of managers. I mean, it's key for
it's the last one, isn't it?
World Cup, exactly. And every player who's in contention to go in a World Cup squad will want to be with their international team, that's for sure, at this particular time. So, yeah, we'll have to wait another fortnight before we come back for the North London derby. I'm glad we've got a game in between United and the North London derby, that's for sure.
That is for sure. Yes. Well, okay. Let's take a little break here in part one, because we do have some questions. We can come back with those, and that will get us through part two. In the absence of any football, that's the best we can do. So go make a cup of whatever it is. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member. Arsblog, that's the Irish in me coming out. On Patreon, I think that's what I was saying. Let me ask you a question first.
Please do. And hopefully it's about football and we can
have
some stuff to talk about.
Sort of is. It's you know, the internet's been going a long while, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've all seen some funny stuff. We've all seen some not so funny stuff. But it's there sometimes to entertain us. And you can think of some of the funny videos that you saw. Was it a cat falling down or a man falling off a swing and landing on his face, whatever it is, you know, those hilarious fail videos.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I opened a window. Carry on.
That's fine. Could have been worse. Is the Alexandra Lacazette interview video from this weekend up there with one of the funniest you've ever seen?
It's incredible. I mean, somebody sent it to me and I opened it. And the first thing that happened, I think you see an interviewer asking him the question. And I was like, where's this going? And I was like, this is in French and it's not subtitled. Am I going to be able to follow it? And then when he opened his mouth, I think I squawked in like disbelief. It's absolutely extraordinary. You'll have to play it.
I've got it. Here
Thank
it is.
Thank goodness.
Here's, if people haven't seen it, this is Alexandre Lacazette being interviewed after, what was Lyon's last game? Did they win? Lyon results, I don't even know.
They drew 0-0, but let's well, there's see. Well,
2-1, they lost to Monaco. That's
oh, you're right, 2-1 to Monaco.
2-1 to Monaco. And this was Alexandre Lacazette being interviewed after. If you don't speak French, and I don't, don't worry about it because it's not really necessary.
No. It's not the way he's, it's not what he says, it's how he says it.
Yeah, so here we go. Here it goes.
C'était un match qui nous semblait équilibré, qui a basculé sur deux coups de pied arrêtés. Vous saviez que Monaco était bon dans ce registre.
Ouais, on le savait dangereux sur coup de pied arrêté, on sait que c'est notre point faible. En plus, on manque de taille à ce niveau-là. Donc, c'est dommage parce que je pense, à part les deux coups de pied arrêtés, on était bien dans le jeu. Ils ont eu quelques situations, nous aussi.
Like, obviously, he's been screaming at his teammates. He's lost his voice.
I mean, listen, we've all had a day where we've screamed at people or been to foot match or whatever. I've never heard that happen. I mean, he has destroyed his vocal cords.
I mean, that's up there with Mikel Arteta, isn't it?
You know, it is.
What he learned from Mikel. What's the one thing that you learned from Mikel Arteta as a manager? Well, it was how to make it sound like I'd huffed a fucking gallon of helium when I was doing a post-match interview. Unbelievable.
I mean, fair play to him. You know, it often takes courage for footballers to go and do a post-match interview after a defeat, but especially so when you sound like Mickey Mouse. Did he know that sound was going to come out, do you think?
He must have, because, you know, it's not something that happens over the course of 90 minutes. You know, that kind of hoarseness or croakiness or squeakiness, whatever you want to call it, I think you've got to have that before the game. You know?
That's a chronic issue, I think, by that stage.
Yeah. He's had that for a couple of days. He lost his voice for a couple of days and it's coming back and I don't quite know. Like, the bass notes were gone.
They were. I mean, yes, it was very, very strange. On that note, Gibrarian said, did you guys watch any good games from other leagues over the weekend? Are there any you're looking forward to this week? And will you get bored enough to watch an MLS game?
No.
I mean, no game that you could have watched would have been more entertaining than that Alexandre Lacazette interview. I can say that for sure.
No, I didn't watch any other football, actually. I watched a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it.
What was the movie?
Nope.
Oh, is that good? I heard it's good.
Nope.
Oh, shame.
In my opinion, I didn't really dig it. And I like him. I like Jordan Peele and what have you, but it didn't do it for me.
Not his best work.
No, I don't think so.
No, I didn't watch any full games. I saw bits and pieces. I saw Nuno Tavares getting more praise for Marseille.
What did you make of his comments last week where he talked about, like, I really wanted the sell-on clause, but Arsenal wouldn't let it happen, etc., etc.?
I think that what we've seen with William Saliba to an extent is that, you know, players like to play to the crowd they're playing in front of at that particular time. And, you know, maybe it's about him wanting to make a positive impression at Marseille. And, you know, at the moment, they're the masters he's serving effectively. You know, he wants to say the right things by them because he's a Marseille player right now. But I found it interesting. I mean, clearly it suggests he's open to that possibility. I mean, an option's only ever an option, right? A player ultimately gets what they want, usually in those scenarios. But I did find that telling that he was like, I would have been open to it. And I have to say, as well as he's doing, and he is doing really, really well, I am still not particularly confident that he'll come back to Arsenal.
No, me neither. Me neither. He said something about like how he's finally playing in his best position or his, you know, his real position, whatever
and
it was.
He's playing as a wing back, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it's not like he was being played on the right at Arsenal.
You know? No, and when he did play as a fullback, he was given a lot of license.
Or he took a lot of license anyway. I think it was
yeah, I don't know if Miguel always wanted to give it to him, judging by the fact he kept taking him off. So yeah, I saw that. I saw events in Serie A in the Juventus game, which were blockbuster, to say the least.
They certainly were. Rob Gunnar on the Discord says, VAR is only shit in England, right? Because he wrote it all in caps, so I felt I had to do it in that way. I mean, that was astonishing, wasn't it?
Yes. If you haven't seen it, there are some videos online doing the rounds. Basically, I think I'm right saying Juventus score what they think is a late winner.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who scores it is sent off for his celebration.
That gets a second yellow for taking a shirt off. He came on as a sub, got booked in the 83rd minute, scored the header, ran off celebrating like a madman, took his shirt off and got a second yellow card for taking your shirt off, which I still think is one of the most pathetic rules in football.
I agree, actually, because someone asked me, I think my wife asked me, we're watching the game together and somebody got booked for celebrating. She was like, why is that the rule? Why has he been booked for that? Maybe it was the women's Euros final. I'm not sure. But somebody was booked for taking off their shirt. And she was like, why is that a rule? And I said, well, you know, it incites the crowd. And she was like, how?
Nipples. Nipples.
And I had no answer.
I think probably the idea was that players were using their undershirts to send messages or express messages or whatever.
Sure.
Wasn't that?
Paddy Power, etc.
Well, that was more underpants.
That was underpants.
You know. But I mean, sometimes it was just a message of solidarity with a family member or whatever it might be. But then I guess they were concerned that it would get political. I don't really think that, you know, football fans are going to be incited or aroused or overly tumescent in the crowd because of, well, yes, true. If it was Giroud, you know, it's a different thing. Yeah. But really, nipples aren't going to do it. I do think it's a stupid rule, but I guess they all know the rule as well.
Yes. Anyway, so he was sent off promptly. Mm. But then VAR got involved in the action.
Yep.
And disallowed the goal for offside, not the player who had scored the header, but there was another player allegedly in the goalkeeper's line of sight. I'm right to say.
Yeah, he went for the ball. Bonucci, he went to try and head it as well. He missed it, didn't make any contact, but he certainly went to head the ball.
Mm.
And on that basis, you know, the offside decision was correct, except there was another player that they didn't even take into account in the VAR footage.
Yeah, so I've seen shots of, you know, the pitch where there's another player basically playing everyone onside who does not feature in the little line drawing replays. And then obviously once the goal was disallowed, all hell broke loose. Somebody else got sent off, I think.
The manager, Allegri, got sent off.
It's just pure chaos. And yeah, another shining example of video technology working an absolute treat.
Mayhem. VAR mayhem. Once again, it's just, I don't know. Every time you think you've seen the worst that it can bring out of the officials, something new happens. At this point, this is like performance art in a way. Like, how can they fuck this up even more?
Yeah.
And you know what will happen? It'll be fucking brilliant at the World Cup. Like, I think, what was the last World Cup?
Well, 2018, Russia. Yeah.
Russia. And wasn't it pretty good in that? And it was before it was being introduced. And I think a lot of people who had doubts about VAR were going, actually, you know, if this is the way it's being implemented, it's probably not bad.
Mm.
And here we are 4 years later, and it's pretty bad. Pretty, pretty, pretty bad.
Yes, afraid so. But with the World Cup, maybe it's a better class of officials, you know, theoretically at least. Anyway.
Yeah, theoretically.
So let's have another question, something a bit different. Alexander Nielsen on Twitter, at Nielsen Alexander, says, how do you view the fact that the three Gabriels weren't picked for Brazil in the final games ahead of the World Cup? Could this impact them and their self-confidence in any way?
I think I saw Tim Stillman talking about this. And from what I understand, it's about giving other players a chance, isn't it? Like, they're pretty much, they know what they're getting with Gabriel Jesus, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's at risk of not going. I thought I saw somebody tweet, and I apologize, I can't remember, but like Gabriel, Big Gabby, is going to be in the squad as well as like the fourth defender. I think that's what they said. But I don't suppose it augurs particularly well for Gabriel Martinelli unless they've absolutely made their minds up about him. He's had a very good start to the season, made real progress, but there is, to be fair, a fairly strong selection of attacking players for the Brazil manager to pick from, right?
It's pretty impressive. yeah, I saw one of those sort of graphics you see of Brazil's attack, and I sort of scoured it to find Martinelli, and he wasn't in there. But the list of players ahead of him, that, you know, there aren't too many you'd take a huge issue with.
No, I mean, Anthony, I take issue with that because, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, Neymar, Richarlison, I take issue with that. I take issue with Richarlison and Anthony. Yeah. And I think both of them should go fuck themselves.
But you've got Neymar, Rafinha, two boys at Madrid.
Rodrigo, Vinicius
Rodrigo
Jr.
And who's the left winger?
Vinicius.
Vinicius, yeah. He's brilliant. Rafinha, I guess, is a contender. They've got a lot to consider. Jesus, obviously. So yeah, I don't know. I'd love Martinelli to get in. I mean, there are other players we've not even mentioned, you know, like so Firmino.
Yeah, he's in that squad, Firmino.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think there's any negative to them not being selected, really. I think, you know, they're just going to push even harder, and as we say, I think they've still got a chance. Certainly, I think Jesus will be in there. It would mean an enormous amount to them. I know that for Martinelli in particular, that World Cup has been a big focus of his for a long time, and he's really fought tooth and nail to get into that squad. So it will be disappointing. That's another factor to consider in how the World Cup might impact the season, you know, players who aren't selected, how that will affect them, or players who are selected and things maybe don't go as they hoped, how will that affect them and their mentality?
The Arshavin.
Remember the Arshavin effect? Absolutely. Yeah. That was not qualifying, wasn't it, I believe?
I think so, and he was just absolutely bereft afterwards. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing about Martinelli is if he doesn't get in, I mean, it's not like he's looking at that squad and thinking, well, how the fuck did I not get in there? I mean, apart from obviously Anthony and Richarlison, who can both go fuck themselves.
Yeah, and also it's he's not in last chance saloon here. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. It might be a motivation for him. I mean, I'm sure he'll be sad and disappointed, but if it means he focuses and gets ready for the next World Cup, I know that's 4 years down the line. But you know, maybe it's more motivation. Maybe he's ready to show that this guy made the wrong decision by picking Anthony and Richarlison, who, as you know, can both go fuck themselves. let me ask you a question here. John Larkin says, "Goodly morning, lads. Hope Lana is recovering well. She is. She's doing better. Thank you. Getting there slowly, slowly. Anyway, out of curiosity, would you read anything into the fact that Gabriel started last Thursday night instead of Saliba? Was it just because he's more familiar with holding, or has Saliba now become the main centre back in the squad?" And this is, of course, the game against FC Zurich when Gabriel started in central defence alongside holding.
Yeah, interesting one. I mean, we wondered, didn't we, if Tomiyasu might have played at left centre-back. But Cedric didn't travel. He had an injury, which I think put paid to that idea. I think if Cedric had been fit, we might well have seen Gabriel given a rest. But I suppose Holding was always going to play the game.
Mm.
And if you're looking at Rob Holding in there, maybe Gabriel was just the most obvious natural partner, you know, being a left-sided centre-back.
Sure.
And I also wonder if, you know, there's physical data that the staff, sports scientists and the like have access to that we don't, and that may have informed their decisions too.
On this, so another one that's sort of close to the physical aspect of the game, Luke, who's at Petit's Ponytail 1, says, have the club replaced Shad Forsyth at all? And I seem to remember that you did some. Did you do an article on this?
But yeah, what? I mentioned him in this show, actually, because I saw that question. Tom Allen, who was with the club previously, has stepped up to become, I think, head of sports science. And that is effectively an internal replacement for Shad Forsyth's role. There has been a suggestion that Arteta might add another member of staff who's maybe a bit more on pitch focused, you know, in terms of being on the grass. I mean, Tom does some work on the grass, and we, you know, if you went into any of the open sessions in pre-season, you would have seen him doing physical work with the team. But I do think I had heard that Mikel was potentially looking to bring somebody else in to kind of augment that setup. It hasn't happened yet, but I wouldn't rule that out in future. But yeah, there was no external replacement for Shad.
Right.
Basically, Tom Allen stepped up and got a promotion.
An internal solution.
An internal solution. We love those historically.
Sure do.
Andrew Turner asked a very simple question on Twitter. Andrew says, is all this news going to mean Partey will be back for Brentford?
I don't know. I mean, he's back in full training, so he's certainly in consideration to start, isn't he? So
yeah. I think he will start. That's my opinion.
Well, there you go.
I just think he's so important to the team. They've been quite careful with him, I think, in terms of, you know, choosing the time for him to return to full training, to return to full contact. And yeah, I think he's got a very good chance of playing Sunday.
Okay, Alexander, who's at @AlexElsworth_, says, it must be so frustrating to go get your full name on Twitter and find out someone else has it and you have to add an underscore.
Yeah, that is annoying. You'd have to, I don't know.
You can't do anything.
Persuade Alex Ellsworth to leave you his Twitter username in his will and then kill him.
I mean, that's a bit of a, I was going to say paper trail, but it's a bit digital there, isn't it?
You know? Yeah. I think you'd be fine.
All right. Anyway, he says, when we inevitably play a football match again, which element of our play are you most optimistic will improve? And which element are you concerned could be figured out by opposition and may require adjustment?
What I want to see us improve is our efficiency in converting territory and possession into goals.
Mm.
That most simple thing...
Scoring goals. Yes.
Yeah. But I feel like that is a bit of a thread for Arsenal this season. I think we're playing good football and we've not quite clicked in terms of how clinical we are. But I'm optimistic that it's within our capacity, you know? I think the talent is there. We're doing a lot right. Sometimes it just needs that final piece to click. And I think that's the one. On the other side, in terms of something that, you know, maybe is could have faded, I guess you'd have to say, you know, getting the ball as far as that. I mean, Arsenal's control of possession has been a real positive and, you know, control of territory and, you know, maybe some of the automatisms and instinctive understanding that's developed between the players could have faded. But they are training together every day. You know, it's not like they've gone on holiday for 2 weeks. So,
yeah.
You'd like to think not.
Yeah,
maybe I'd agree. We could iron out a few of the, you know, we've seen some individual errors at the back as well.
Sure. Just a little bit, not casual, but we've let in some goals that we shouldn't have let in. So yeah. If we could stop doing that, I think I'd be happy with that. And I agree with you about just turning the dominance in possession and territory into more end product. I think, you know, we could make games safer for ourselves and the potential benefits of that in a season when fixtures are going to be very congested. We've got 9 games in August. If you're not fighting to the death, you know, up to the 96th minute, it might make just a little bit of a difference when it goes to the next game or the next game, you know, and just how much energy you can conserve. I'm not saying you don't have to work. Obviously, you do. But, you know, it's a lot easier at 3-0 up than it is when you're hanging on to a 2-1, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can rest more players as well, especially with 5 subs.
That's true.
We had a couple of questions that have sort of mentioned Gabriel, but Caps, who's at Caps AFC, just, you know, he goes for the, what's that phrase? Goes for the gullet? Is that a thing?
Goes for the gullet?
Well, have I made that up? Jugular.
Jugular.
I was like, what?
Your gullet is not in the same place as your jugular.
What's your jugular?
It's a vein in your neck, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your gullet?
Is your belly, isn't it? Isn't it?
The passage by which food passes from the mouth. It's the esophagus. So they're in similar places, to be fair.
Right.
You could reach the gullet by going through for the jugular. Right. Go for the jugular. Well, a lot of my content's about murdering people today. I need to be very careful. So anyway, Caps says, would love to hear your thoughts on Gabriel because he has so much clear quality, but we're starting to see more and more that he has a mistake in him. Wondering how you think we move forward with him.
I mean,
I think that's a bit harsh, personally.
I mean, I think he has made mistakes, but I think he's still, what, a 24-year-old central defender who, for the most part, has been really solid for us, you know? If there's a level of expectation around central defenders that they never make a mistake, I mean, we saw William Saliba make a mistake and get applauded. And I know that the circumstances around that are quite unique in a way because of how much people had invested in him and all the rest of it. But,
sure,
you know, I don't think Gabriel is a particularly error-prone central defender. I think he has made a mistake this season, a big one, obviously, when we got caught on the ball against Fulham. But I don't really worry about our central defenders that much anymore. And that's nice, you know? I think we've got, what, a 21-year-old in Saliba? Ben White's 24. Gabriel is 24. I think we have to acknowledge that as a collection of central defenders, it's pretty good, especially when you take into account their age, because often central defenders don't really come into their prime until the sort of mid to late 20s, you know, because of the experience that they gain and everything else. So, look, I do wonder, like, what a Ben White-Saliba partnership might look like, but I'm not sort of ready to throw out Gabriel with the bathwater. Like, I don't want to turn Gabriel into a baby and then throw him out with the bathwater. Because you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater unless, of course, the babies are Antony and Richarlison, who, as everybody knows at this point, can go fuck themselves.
So in answer to the question, how do we move forward with Gabriel, your proposition is we don't turn him into a baby.
Correct. Just,
I think that's something we can all agree with.
Let him continue his
to mature his into an adult.
Yeah.
And let's not try and regress him
exactly
to nappies.
This is not Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I nearly
went a bit Alex Lacazette
there, didn't I? I just do the rest of the podcast like this. I have a question here from Lorick 496.
Okay.
And he says, with consistent injury setbacks for Emile Smith-Rowe over the last 8 to 9 months, will we regret not taking the £35 million Villa offered in 2021?
No. We won't.
Because we're not turning him into a baby either.
Well, I'll tell you why we won't, because A, he made a massive contribution last season.
Yep.
Which should not be forgotten. And although it ended in disappointment, we did return to Europe that season. That was worth a good deal of money to the club. He also signed a new contract that summer instead of going to Aston Villa. And I think if you were to put Emile Smith Rowe on the market at any time in the next 18 months, I think you could achieve at least that fee, if not more. So I don't hugely worry about that decision. And I still think that, you know, his future may very well be and should really be with Arsenal. I still think he's a player of enormous potential. I often think about that moment in All or Nothing when Granit Xhaka kind of shouts over the dressing room to Emile Smith Rowe and says, from your first day here, I knew you were the future of this club. And I was struck in midweek by an interview I saw on Goal with Kieran Tierney talking about, he was asked who the most talented player in training is. And granted, all these answers are kind of coloured by relationships and friendships and dressing room, but he didn't really hesitate before saying Smith Rowe in terms of, you know, what he can do with the ball at his feet and the threat he provides. So he's a player I'm still very excited about. But it's not all good news. I am worried about the health and the fitness and the injury situation, because he's got a history of problems and pain and issues that keep him out of games. And to be honest, I think he's a case where we have to sort of hope that he can mature out of that. And players have in the past. You know, I think of someone like Gael Clich. He was a guy who was sort of perennially injured, but then managed to put it together and play a lot of football. And I hope the same could be true for Smith Rowe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all down to Tom Allen.
Well, yeah, no pressure, Tom.
Yeah. Just sort of.
What do you think about, you know, the decision to keep Smith Rowe last summer, and also...
Well, it was absolutely the right decision. Absolutely the right decision to keep Smith Rowe, because it was it last summer or the summer before?
Oh, it must have been the summer before.
I think it was the summer before, you know? So at that point, you know, we needed a player like Smith Rowe. You know, we needed what he could bring to the team, and, you know, you want to augment your squad these days with more talent, with more creativity, with more technical quality. But, you know, back then, it was
2021, June 2021. So that's, it depends how what you call last summer, but
Okay, yeah, so like...
No, a year ago. I'm going mad. That was a year ago.
Anyway, they were trying. I think perhaps Aston Villa were getting ideas a little above their station. I remember seeing a lot of tweets being retweeted from Aston Villa fans who were like, oh, well, it's fine. Smith Rowe doesn't want to join us. He can just enjoy relegation with Arsenal. You know, those kind of things. It was like,
where are Aston Villa in the table right now, actually?
I don't know. Down there?
Right down there.
Right down there. So
17th.
Yeah. So, no, it was not the... I don't think we would regret it, even if, you know, things don't go as well as we would like for Smith Rowe. I think at that moment, it was the right thing to do for Arsenal, you know? So.
It is interesting, though, you know, if Arsenal had signed a winger in this window, had they bought Rafinha, say, you know, Smith Rowe's not had a lot of football as things stand, but he might have had potentially even less, even if he was fit. So I do think it's something worth having half an eye on, you know, over the next year to 2 years, in terms of how much football is he getting? Is it enough to keep him happy? Is it enough for him to push for a place in the England squad? Because, you know, not too long ago, he broke into that England squad and he was talked about potentially going to the World Cup. And I have to say right now, with the injuries and not being in the Arsenal first 11, that World Cup feels quite a long way away.
Yeah. Like, he was away with the under-21s last summer. Yeah, I mean, the injuries have not been good. Like, it is hard not to be worried, but hopefully they can get on top of them. Because I think the talent and the potential is there. But, of course, you know, that doesn't really mean anything if you're not playing. So, fingers crossed he can get himself back to full fitness. So,
What about this from Lordy C, who's at Lordy C 85 on Twitter? And Lordy says, I'm really impressed with Nketiah's all-round play recently. How much of that is coaching versus natural development, would you say? Have the coaches been working on his back to goal, hold up play, etc.? Do you know?
That's a really good question. We had a similar question as well. I can't find it, but it was about player development and I think I opened it up, but I can't find it. I apologize. Here it is. It's from Speckle Jim. He said, do you think that the club worked directly on specific players' weaknesses, as in individually through tailored training programs, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, I think it's clear that Eddie Nketiah's all-round game has improved. How much of that is down to sort of physical maturity versus coaching? I'm not quite sure, but I also think that, like, I'm not saying he was one-dimensional, but clearly his strength was in the box, and he was a poacher. He was a penalty box forward, right? But you've got to be able to do a bit more, and I'm sure that over the last 12 to 18 months, they've been doing plenty of work with Eddie on the coaching, on the training ground. You know, what to do with your back to goal, how to turn, when to make the runs, you know, when to stretch defenses. We saw the other night against FC Zurich, you know, where he was there and he was bombing down the left wing and got the ball across for Marquinhos to score. There's no question that he looks physically more powerful, more mature. He's better than he was outside the box. Even the goal he scored the other night, that was a chance he missed a couple of times last season. So
yeah,
I'm sure, like, I don't know the ins and outs of it, the nuts and bolts of it, but it's got to be down to coaching. And part of coaching isn't just sort of picking the team and throwing them out on a Saturday and doing the tactics, et cetera, et cetera. It is about improving the players that you have. Like, that's part of the job for Mikel Arteta or for whoever's in charge. Like, we saw it with Arsene Wenger, the way that he brought players through and improved them countless times. We saw a player come in and just get better and better and better under Arsene Wenger. And part of that is down to, you know, the confidence you give them, the motivation, but also the work that you do on the training ground and making sure that they understand the role that they're playing in the team when they're picked.
Yeah, I think it's less a case of taking a player's weakness and working on that specifically. It's more a case of having a vision and an idea of how you want, you know, certain positions on the pitch to be fulfilled. And Arteta's been quite clear, I think, in terms of what he expects from a centre forward and quite demanding, to be honest. And I think it has been an adjustment, an adaptation for Eddie. And that has come on the training ground, and they've done a lot of work in terms of his link play, his positioning, dropping in. And Eddie's taken a lot of that on board. And I think that's a big part of why Arteta likes Eddie so much, has been his kind of willingness to do that and to be maybe a bit more unselfish than he'd been accustomed to being when coming through the youth ranks. But I think you touched on the physical dimension, and I think that's a big, big part in Eddie's development, is him kind of growing into his body and filling out a bit more. I mean, there was a picture of him going around in pre-season with his top off.
Nipples.
I don't know if he was booked.
Probably.
No, probably. But the guy is absolutely ripped. I mean, he's in tremendous shape. He's built a lot of muscle mass as well. And I just think, as a centre forward, you can't underestimate how important that is. I mean, and he's learning from a guy now in Gabriel Jesus, who shows you don't have to be the biggest guy to give your opponent a real physical battle.
Yep, it's true. It's true. So, yeah, I hope the progress continues. I think we should probably just knock it on the head, because there's not a great deal going on. We don't want to use up all the non-football stuff for the rest of the non-football that we've got in the weeks ahead. I did like this from Duncan Ogle Scan, who's at Duncan Ogle Scan on Twitter. He said, my spectating week, I had tickets to all of these. Thursday, the first day of the test, rained off. Friday, BMW PGA Golf, cancelled. Sunday, Suns football, cancelled. Did he need a ticket? Do you need a ticket to go to your Suns football? Anyway, I know what you're saying. Thursday, Arsenal versus PSV, postponed. Am I a jinx? Are there any events you want called off? So, if he buys a ticket, I guess that's it.
Yeah. Not really. I mean, I want things back on, ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, we've got a bank holiday on Monday, which I guess, you know, people will appreciate a day off work, even if it is for a slightly somber occasion. Is there anything I want cancelled? I mean, I guess there's a few other football matches that I wouldn't mind seeing going. If, you know, if we could stop Spurs fulfilling another fixture this season, that might be good.
Forever.
Yeah. Mm. Just buy a Spurs season ticket, I'd say.
I think that's too much to ask of an Arsenal player.
Yeah, maybe.
It really is. Final one then. Gunnar Fan from Cannes. You said, with no games this week, I'm hoping you can answer this question. You spoke too soon. There is a game. Anyway, that's not the question. He said,
nonetheless, we shall try.
He said, I'm getting married on October the 1st.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Oh, I just realised what that means.
He said, I live in Canada, so our North London derby that day is 7:30 for me. How would you go about handling not overindulging when the result goes our way, but also what to do to save my mood should the result not go our way?
That is tough.
Media
Imagine
blackout
waking up
day?
Your wedding day and Arsenal have lost to Spurs. I think I'd call the wedding off. I think I'd say it's an omen. Sorry, it's not going to happen. I think you might have to avoid the game. Do you think that's realistic?
It's not possible these days. It's just not possible. You pick up your phone, open up Twitter or whatever it is.
Yeah, it sounds like you don't need to pick it up. Sometimes it's sending you an alert.
He's on the Discord. Yeah, if you got the apps, in, you know, you're getting score alerts and all that. So it's not possible. I think what you just need to do is have faith that Arsenal will do the business on October the 1st.
And also, you've got to be positive. What a wedding day that could be.
Not only is he getting married and taking this woman to be his lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold in sickness and in health, blah, 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 for the rest of blah, 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 blah. But also Arsenal will have won the North London derby. And if that's not, I mean, that's the cake. The wedding is the icing on the cake, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Many-tiered cake. The two great loves of his life. On the
Arsenal and cake. Oh, and of course, his soon-to-be bride. Well,
I'll have my fingers crossed for you on the day. That's a daunting day right there.
It is. I'll be there.
Will you?
Yep. Coming over for this one. So
fantastic.
Hopefully I'm a good omen. I think the last North London derby I was at was the one where Cesc scored that goal. Remember, we hadn't stopped celebrating the goal we just scored. And he just ran and made football look easy. When Cesc made football look like the simplest thing in the world, take
Marcel
the ball.
Odegaard's going to dribble from the halfway line.
Correct. To make it 2-0. Then we'll get the third goal before halftime. We can all relax. It'd be fine.
That'd be nice. We'll all nip over to the wedding. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Have a bit of cake. It'd be good. All right. Well, I think we should leave it there, James. Thank you very much, as always, to you guys listening. Thank you for being here. Hopefully, we'll have some good football stuff to talk about over the weekend game at Brentford. We're doing it next Monday, are we?
I've just been told I've got the day off because of the bank holiday, so it will be a normal time on Monday.
Normal time, Arscast Extra. Hopefully, we're talking about a good result as well. For now, though, take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.